Laudato Jesus Christus, Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Friday, June the 24th, the death toll in Afghanistan's earthquake continues to rise as rescuers scramble to provide food and shelter to survivors amid fears of a cholera outbreak. Canadian bishops welcome the release of the programme for Pope Francis's apostolic journey to their country. And the World Meeting of Families features the prevention of domestic violence. In the Vatican, I'm Linda Bordoni. The death toll in Afghanistan's earthquake continues to rise, with official figures showing over 1,100 victims. Meanwhile, international humanitarian aid has begun to arrive in the country's stricken eastern region, where distribution is hampered by limited access to remote mountain areas. Nathan Morley reports.
There are growing fears for the health of survivors as the death toll rose to 1,150. Militant Islamist Taliban media reports that 3,000 homes were damaged after the magnitude 6 quake. The Taliban, who have ruled Afghanistan since August 2021, called on aid organizations for support. The first shipments of international aid arrived in the country on Thursday, including tents, blankets, food and other relief supplies. Japan, South Korea, Germany, Taiwan and Pakistan are also sending aid. Furthermore, the Red Crescent and the World Food Programme are involved in relief efforts. The violent earthquake shook eastern Afghanistan in the border region with Pakistan earlier this week. Civil protection agencies fear an even higher number of victims may be found, as rescue work has been hampered by limited access to remote mountain regions. By Wednesday night, Taliban officials said the search and rescue operations were finished in most places, although in remoter areas, some continued. The country is susceptible to earthquakes as it's located over a number of fault lines. The UN says over the last decade, more than 7,000 people have been killed in earthquakes in Afghanistan. For Vatican Radio, this is Nathan Morley reporting.
In Ukraine, the governor of the eastern Luhansk region said on Friday that defending troops will withdraw from the embattled city of Severodonetsk. The decision comes after weeks of fierce fighting against Russian forces in the strategic city. Authorities did not indicate whether troops would be withdrawn immediately or over what time frame the withdrawal would happen. After failing to take the capital, Kiev, early in the war, Russian forces have focused on trying to take complete control of Luhansk and Donetsk provinces, which together comprise the Donbas region in eastern Ukraine. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has ordered a strengthening of the country's defense capabilities. His orders came at a key meeting where top military officials reportedly adopted an important action plan for frontline troops. Analysts fear that the decisions reported by state media on Friday may indicate that North Korea could be planning to deploy tactical nuclear weapons to frontline artillery units. Christopher Wells reports.
Kim Jong-un presided over the enlarged meeting of North Korea's 8th Central Military Commission in Pyongyang, where top officials on Thursday approved new measures aimed at, quote, strengthening the country's war deterrent. This according to the state-run Korean Central News Agency, in a rare mention of North Korea revising its war plans. Officials at the meeting, it reported, decided to bolster the operational duties of the country's frontline units with, quote, an important military action plan. It also said Kim called for his entire army to go all out in carrying out the plans to bolster the nation's military muscle and consolidate what it called powerful self-defense capabilities for overwhelming any hostile forces. The news agency did not elaborate on the action plan, but analysts say the country could be planning to deploy battlefield nuclear weapons targeting South Korea along their tense border. In addition to tests of short-range missiles, North Korea has also test-fired intercontinental ballistic missiles and new hypersonic missiles as part of an unprecedented number of weapons launches this year. All this, as observers say, Pyongyang is also preparing to conduct its first nuclear test in 5 years. I'm Christopher Wells.
The United Nations said on Friday that information it has gathered shows that the bullets that killed Al Jazeera journalist Shireen Abu Akleh on May the 11th were fired by Israeli forces. Speaking to reporters in Geneva, the UN Human Rights Office spokesperson said investigations conducted by several media organizations came to the same conclusion. Abu Akleh was killed while she was covering an army raid on Jenin in the northern occupied West Bank. The crisis in the Anglophone region of Cameroon has dragged on unabated for years. Violent clashes between armed secessionists and government forces have led to the deaths of thousands of people and displaced over 700,000 others. In all this time, the church has been actively present in the region, calling for dialogue and for a peaceful resolution of the situation. Father Benedict Mayaki spoke to the president of the Cameroonian Bishops' Conference and Archbishop of Bamenda, Archbishop Andrew Nkair, about the experience of the church during the crisis.
The experience of the church has been a very, very difficult one because as a church, we have to navigate the thin line of neutrality. Neutrality in the sense of not belonging to any side of the conflict, but to stand in the middle to preach peace and to see how to reconcile people. Of course, in this situation, it is misconstrued by some of the parties. Sometimes government thinks we are not condemning the separatists enough. And most of the time, the separatists think that we are not hard against government. And so you stand in the middle, and you are being accused on both sides. But I say at all times that my existence, my work, my focus is neither separatist nor government. My focus is the people of God, the people who are suffering, the children who cannot go to school, families that have been displaced and that are running around everywhere, and some have crossed over to Nigeria and other countries as refugees. These are the people who make me not to sleep at night. I keep insisting that killing ourselves will not help us. We need peace. And you can't get peace and justice by killing each other. Let us realize that we are not killing ourselves to arrive at good. We can only kill ourselves and arrive at more killing and more violence. So therefore, the church has been centered on peace. We have been trying to preach peace and to preach reconciliation. And at the same time, we have been trying to work also with humanitarian assistance, bring humanitarian assistance to those who are suffering, those who are displaced, and those who are very, very badly affected. So the church continues its message.
And that was Archbishop Andrew Nkair of Mabanda, Cameroon, speaking there to Father Benedict Mayaki. The Catholic bishops of Canada have welcomed the release of the programme for Pope Francis's apostolic journey to Canada, which is scheduled to take place from July the 24th to the 29th. The bishops expressed their hopes that the papal visit will offer another step in the journey of healing, reconciliation and hope, as Devon Watkins reports.
The Holy Father's pilgrimage will focus on Indigenous healing and reconciliation, while also providing the shepherd of the world's 1.2 billion Catholics an opportunity to encounter the faithful in Canada. The country's Catholic Bishops' Conference offered that take on Pope Francis's scheduled apostolic journey in a statement on Thursday. The Pope is set to arrive in the western city of Edmonton on July 24th before heading east to Quebec City and then returning to Rome on July 29th. His will be the fourth papal visit to Canada and the first since St. John Paul II visited in 2002. Canada's bishops note that the Pope has relatively few appointments each day due to his ongoing knee pain, which forced him to postpone his visit to South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Due to his advanced age and limitations, say the bishops, it is expected that participation by Pope Francis at public events will be limited to approximately 1 hour. The apostolic journey will be focused on the theme Walking Together and will see the Pope hold various encounters with Indigenous peoples. Archbishop Richard Smith, the local general coordinator of the visit, said the journey comes on the heels of the Pope's meeting in Rome with survivors of Canada's residential school system. We pray that this pilgrimage will serve as another meaningful step in the long journey of healing, reconciliation, and hope, say the bishops. Pope Francis starts his apostolic visit on July 24th in Edmonton, the capital city of the Western Alberta province, which is home to the largest number of former residential schools in Canada. As the Church celebrates the July 26th feast of St. Anne, the grandmother of Jesus, who is greatly venerated by Indigenous peoples, the Pope will celebrate an open-air Mass in Edmonton. After flying to the eastern city of Quebec on July 28th, Pope Francis will celebrate Mass at St. Anne de Beaupré, one of the oldest and most popular pilgrimage sites in North America. The Pope's meeting with the bishops of Canada will then lead to the bishops and Indigenous leaders holding a dinner focused on friendship and ongoing dialogue. Pope Francis wraps up his apostolic journey to Canada with a stop in Iqaluit, where he will meet with Indigenous leaders and residential school survivors. I'm Devin Watkins.
The 10th World Meeting of Families continues in the Vatican with a series of keynote speeches and panel discussions interspersed with music events. On Thursday, amongst those bringing their testimonies to the meeting was Christaria Welland, a clinical psychologist and catechist who spoke about domestic violence. She said around 125 million Catholic women may endure physical or sexual violence at least once in their lifetime. Dr. Welland told the meeting that she based her conclusion on firm statistics that 30% of women worldwide are victims of violence. And speaking to Father Benedict Mayaki, she elaborated on the lifelong effects of domestic violence and the importance of training priests in this area.
In families where there has been violence in previous generations, I call that somebody crossing the line, right? And that line has been crossed and it just continues to be crossed because there's nothing to stop it. And this happens with sexual abuse as well in families. But, you know, focusing again on domestic violence, it's one of the greatest risk factors for becoming an abuser is to grow up in a family where you saw your father abusing your mother. And if you are a victim or if you have experienced domestic violence, one of your greatest risk factors for being that person is to have grown up in a family where you saw your mother being abused. And so this tends to break the barriers. It's also a learning experience, and now we know with our greater amount of neurological research we've been able to do, trauma affects the brain. And so there are many reasons why somebody who has experienced violence may become violent themselves. And it's not one-to-one. It's not like if you experience violence, you are 100% doomed to become a perpetrator yourself. That's not true. However, it is a strong risk factor.
In your presentation, you highlighted that for many victims, the priest is still the first person they go to. What can the church do to reduce these instances of domestic violence?
The first answer is, how am I going to respond in the now? Because, yes, I need to prevent, and, yes, we need to have a plan for long-term strategy and all that. That's the second part. But someone arrives on my doorstep, all beaten up or looking for help and crying and with their kids in tow and all of that, how am I going to respond to that in the now, right? And so we need to have a plan for that as well, which is why we need to train priests. And, of course, you know, priests are not trained to be therapists or counselors most of the time. There's some of them are, but that's not their main thing. In my opinion, I believe all priests need to be trained on how to respond immediately with compassion and then to make appropriate referrals, because it's like a medical emergency. And with domestic violence, like, I can't just make the sign of the cross over someone and say, well, you know, you have to forgive and forget, and you need to go home, and this is your cross, and you have to carry it. So people do say that because they really don't know what to respond to, and they don't even know what they're saying.
And that's all for this edition of Vatican and World News. My thanks to Bruno Orti in studio. In the Vatican, I'm Linda Bordoni. Bye-bye.